After the taking of Babylon, Darius himself marched against the Scythians. Foreseeing that Asia abounded in men and that he gathered from it a great revenue, he became desirous of punishing the Scythians for the unprovoked wrong they had done him when they invaded Asia and defeated those who encountered them. For the Scythians, as I have before shown, ruled the upper country of Asia for 28 years. They invaded Asia in their pursuit of the Cimmerians and made an end of the power of the Medes, who were the rulers of Asia before the coming of the Scythians. The Scythians say that their nation is the youngest in the world, to the tradition whereof I myself do especially incline, it is to this purpose. The nomad Scythians inhabiting Asia, being hard-pressed in war by the Massagetae, fled away across the river Araxes to the Cimmerian country, for the country where the Scythians now inhabit is said to have belonged of old to the Cimmerians. I praise not the Scythians in all respects, but in this greatest matter they have devised that none who attacks them can escape, and none can catch them if they desire not to be found. For when men have no established cities or fortresses, but all the horse-bearers and mounted archers, living not by tilling the soil, but by cattle-rearing and carrying their dwellings on wagons, how should these not be invincible and unapproachable? Now, the Scythians blind all their slaves, for they are not tillers of the soil, but wandering grazers. As to war, these are their customs. A Scythian drinks of the blood of the first man whom he has overthrown. He carries to his king the heads of all whom he has slain in battle, for he receives a share of the booty if he brings a head, but not otherwise. He scalps the head by making a cut round the ears, then grasping the scalp and shaking the head out. Then he scrapes out the flesh with the rib of an ox, and kneads the skin with his hands, and having made it supple, he keeps it for a napkin, fastening it to the bridle of his horse, which he himself rides, and taking pride in it, for he is judged the best man who has the most scalp napkins. There are many, too, that flay the skin from the whole body and carry it about on horseback, stretched on a wooden frame. The heads themselves, not all, but of their bitterest foes, they treat in this way. If he be rich, he covers the head with the raw hide and gilds the inside of it and so uses it for a drinking cup. Moreover, once in every year, each governor of a province brews a bowl of wine in his own province, whereof those Scythians drink who have slain enemies. Those who have not achieved this, taste not this wine, but sit apart, dishonored. How many the Scythians are, I was not able to learn with exactness, but the accounts which I heard concerning their number did not tally, some saying that they are very many, and some that they are very few, counted as Scythians. In this region stands a bronze vessel. The Scythian bronze vessel easily contains 5,400 gallons, and it is of 6 fingers thickness. Their king, whose name was Ariantus, desiring to know the numbers of the Scythians, commanded every Scythian to bring him the point from an arrow, threatening all who should not do so with death. So a vast number of arrowheads was brought, and he resolved to make and leave a memorial out of them, and he made of these this bronze vessel. Thus much I heard concerning the number of the Scythians. The burial place of their kings are in the land of the Gerai, which is the end of the navigation of the Borysthenes. There, whenever their king has died, the Scythians dig a great four-cornered pit in the ground. When this is ready, they take up the dead man, his body enclosed in wax, his belly cut open and cleansed and filled with cut marsh plants and frankincense and parsley and aniseed and sewn up again. Then, having laid the dead in the tomb on a couch, they plant spears all round the body and lay across them wooden planks, which they then roof over with hides. In the open space which is left in the tomb, they bury, after strangling, one of the king's concubines, his cupbearer, his cook, his groom, his squire, and his messenger, besides horse and first fruits of all else, and golden cups. After the burial, the Scythians cleanse themselves, as I will show. They anoint and wash their heads. As for their bodies, they set up 3 poles, leaning together to a point, and cover these over with woolen rugs. Then, in the place so enclosed to the best of their power, they make a pit in the centre, beneath the poles and the rugs, and throw red-hot stones into it. They have hemp growing in their country, very like flax. This grows both of itself and also by their sowing, and of it the Thracians even make garments, which are very like linen. The Scythians then take the seed of this hemp, and, creeping under the rugs, they throw it on the red-hot stones. And, being so thrown, it smoulders and sends forth so much steam that no Greek vapour bath could surpass it. The Scythians howl in joy for the vapour bath. This serves them instead of bathing, for scarce ever do they wash their bodies with water. But their women grind with a rough stone cypress and cedar and frankincense wood, pouring water also thereon, and with the thick stuff so ground they anoint all their bodies and faces, whereby not only does a fragrant scent abide upon them, but when on the second day they take off their ointment, their skin becomes clean and shining. As far as the country of these Scythians, all the aforesaid land is level, and the soil is deep, but thereafter it is stony and rough. After a long passage through this rough country, there are men inhabiting the foothills of high mountains, who are said to be all bald from their birth, male and female alike, and snub-nosed, with long beards. They speak a tongue of their own, and wear Scythian raiment, and their fare comes from trees. For some Scythians make their way to them, and do their business with seven interpreters and in seven languages. But for what lies beyond the bald men, no one can speak with exact knowledge. For mountains high and impassable bar the way, and no man crosses them. These bald men say, but for my part I believe them not, that the mountains are inhabited by men with goats' feet, and that beyond these again are men who sleep for 6 months of the 12. This I cannot accept at all for true. But the country east of the Bald Heads is known for certain to be inhabited by the Isidones, although of what lies northward, either of the Bald Heads or the Isidones, we have no knowledge, save what comes from the report of these latter. It is said to be the custom of the Isidones that whenever a man's father dies, all the nearest of kin bring beasts of the flock, and having killed these and cut up the flesh, they cut up also the dead father of their host, and set out all the flesh mingled together for a feast. As for his head, they strip it bare and cleanse and gild it, and keep it for a sacred relic. For the rest, these are said to be a law-abiding people, and the women have equal power with the men. All this aforementioned country is exceeding cold. For 8 months of every year there is frost unbearable, and in these you shall not make mud by pouring out water, but by lighting a fire. The sea freezes, and all the Cimmerian Bosphorus and the Scythians dwelling this side of the Fos lead armies over the ice, and drive their wains across to the land of the Sindhi. So it is ever winter for 8 months, and it is cold in that country for the four that remain. Here is a winter of a different sort from the winters that come on other lands, for in the season for rain there falls scarce any. But for all the summer there is rain unceasing, and when there are thunderstorms in other lands, here there are none. But in summer there is great plenty of them. Horses have endurance to bear the Scythian winter. Mules and asses cannot at all bear it. But as touching the feathers, whereof the Scythians say that the air is full, insomuch that none can see or traverse the land beyond, I hold this opinion. Northward of that country, snow falls continuously, though less in the summer than in winter, as is to be expected. Whoever has seen snow falling thickly near him knows of himself my meaning, for the snow is like feathers, and by reason of the winter, which is such as I have said, the parts to the north of this continent are uninhabited. I think, therefore, that in this tale of feathers, the Scythians and their neighbours do but speak of snow in a figure. Thus, then, I have spoken of these parts that are said to be most distant. The farming Scythians inhabit a land stretching eastward a 3 days' journey to a river called Panticapus, and northward as far as an 11 days' voyage up the Borysthenes, and north of these the land is uninhabited for a long way, after which desert is the country of the man-eaters, who are a nation by themselves and by no means Scythian, and beyond them is true desert, wherein no nation of man dwells, as far as we know. But to the east of these farming Scythians cross the river Panticapus, and you are in the land of nomad Scythians, who sow nothing, nor plough, and all these lands, except the woodlands, are bare of trees. These nomads inhabit to the eastward a country that stretches 14 days' journey to the river Geras. Across the Geras, there are lands called Royal, where are the best and most in number of the Scythians, who deem all other Scythians their slaves. Their territory stretches southward to the Tauric land, and eastward to the fosse that was dug by the sons of the blind men. Above the Royal Scythians, to the north dwell the Black Cloaks, who are of another and not a Scythian stock. And beyond the Black Cloaks, the land is all marshes and uninhabited by men, so far as we know. The Scythians, reckoning that they were not able by themselves to repel Darius's army in open warfare, sent messengers to their neighbours, whose kings had already met and were taking counsel, as knowing that a great army was marching against them. Those that had so met were the kings of the Tauri, Agathyrsi, Neuri, Man-Eaters, Black Cloaks, Galoni, Budini, and Sauromate. Among these, the Tauri have the following customs. All shipwrecked men, and any Greeks whom they take in their sea raiding, they sacrifice to the Virgin Goddess, as I will show. After the first rites of sacrifice, they smite the victim on the head with a club. According to some, they then throw down the body from a cliff, whereon their temple stands, and impale the head. The Tauri live by plundering and war. The Agathyrsi live more delicately than all the other men, and are greatly given to wearing gold. Their intercourse with women is promiscuous, that so they may be brothers and kinsfolk to each other, and thus neither envy nor hate their fellows. In the rest of their customs, they are like to the Thracians. The Neuri follow Scythian usages, but one generation before the coming of Darius's army, it fell out that they were driven from their country by snakes. It may be that they are wizards, for the Scythians say that once a year, every one of the Neuri is turned into a wolf. For myself, I cannot believe this tale, but they tell it nevertheless, yea, and swear by its truth. The Man-Eaters are, of all men, the most savage in their manner of life. They know no justice and obey no law. They are nomads, wearing a dress like the Scythian, but speaking a language of their own. They are the only people of all these that eat men. The Black Cloaks all wear black raiment, whereof they take their name. Their usages are Scythian. The Budini are a great and numerous nation. The eyes of all of them are very bright, and they are reddish. They have a city built of wood. Concerning the Hyperborean people, neither the Scythians nor any other dwellers in these lands tell us anything.